Well, well, well. That is Soul Jazz Orchestra with People, People. This is Lead Stories. I'm Yatrice Lead, and it is Friday, October 11th. And we are that many days into the partial government shutdown and less than a week from a bipartisan plan that has yet to surface that should cover the nation's near $17 trillion debt. Well, there is a meeting going on, a meeting that started yesterday at the White House after all the barking at each other and back and forth and name-calling and vitriol. The White House did signal finally that it was interested in having a discussion, which is what the Republicans said that they wanted all along. And it didn't produce anything concrete other than a ray of hope that they're getting close to some kind of plan, probably a short-term plan, the details of which we do not know, but the discussions continue. So we'll see. But what we do know is the frame of mind that they went into those discussions with, and we have a clue from Jack Lew, the Secretary of the Treasury, who spoke to the Senate Finance Committee yesterday, warning of the dire consequences if something isn't worked out by October the 17th, the date he gave as the drop-dead date for having a plan, or else all hell will break loose. The United States will default on its loans, and the consequences not only will be confined to the United States, but the consequences are likely to have global effect. So let's listen to how he framed it yesterday and issued his version of dire warning, but listen very carefully, because when we come back, we'll be talking about some of the coded words in his testimony before the Finance Committee. Secretary Jack Lew.
To discuss the potential impacts of a failure by Congress to increase the debt limit. Congress has an important choice to make for the American people, and Congress alone has the power to act to make sure that the full faith and credit of the United States is never called into question. No Congress in 224 years of American history has allowed our country to default, and it's my sincere hope that this Congress will not be the first. Among the risks that we control, the biggest threat to sustain growth in our economy is a recurrence of manufactured crises in Washington and self-inflicted wounds. Unfortunately, today we face a manufactured political crisis that is beginning to deliver an unnecessary blow to our economy right at a time when the United States economy, the American people, have painstakingly fought back from the worst recession since the Great Depression. In addition to the economic cost of the shutdown, the uncertainty around raising the debt limit is beginning to stress financial markets. At our auction of four-week Treasury bills on Tuesday, the interest rate nearly tripled relative to the prior week's auction, and it reached the highest level since October 2008. And measures of expected volatility in the stock market have risen to the highest levels of the year. The only way to avoid inflicting further damage to our economy is for Congress to act. I know from my conversations with a wide range of business leaders, representing industries from retail to manufacturing and banking, that this is a paramount concern for them. That's why it's important for Congress to reopen the government, to raise the debt ceiling, and then to work with the President to address our fiscal challenges in a balanced fashion. Republican and Democratic presidents and Treasury secretaries alike have universally understood the importance of protecting one of our most precious assets, the full faith and credit of the United States. President Reagan wrote to Congress in 1983, and I quote, "This country now possesses the strongest credit in the world. The full consequences of a default, or even the serious prospect of default by the United States, are impossible to predict and awesome to contemplate. Denigration of the full faith and credit of the United States would have substantial effects on the domestic financial markets and on the value of the dollar in exchange markets," close quote. If Congress fails to meet its responsibility, it could deeply damage financial markets, the ongoing economic recovery, and the jobs and savings of millions of Americans. I have a responsibility to be transparent with Congress and the American people about these risks. And I think it would be a grave mistake to discount or dismiss them. For these reasons, I have repeatedly urged Congress to take action immediately so we can honor all of our country's past commitments. The Treasury Department has regularly updated Congress over the course of the last 5 months as new information has become available about when we would exhaust our extraordinary measures. In addition, Treasury has provided information about what our cash balances will be when we exhaust our extraordinary measures. As our forecasts have changed, I've consistently provided updates in order to give Congress the best information about the urgency with which they should act. And last month, I met with the full membership of this committee to discuss these issues. Treasury continues to project that the extraordinary measures will be exhausted no later than October 17, 2013, at which point the federal government will have run out of borrowing authority. At that point, we will be left to meet our country's commitments with only the cash on hand and any incoming revenues, placing our economy in a dangerous position. If we have insufficient cash on hand, it would be impossible for the United States of America to meet all of its obligations, including Social Security and Medicare benefits, payments to our military and veterans, and contracts with private suppliers, for the first time in our history. At the same time, we're relying on investors from all over the world to continue to hold U.S. bonds. Every week, we roll over approximately $100 billion in U.S. bills. If U.S. bondholders decided that they wanted to be repaid rather than continuing to roll over their investments, we could unexpectedly dissipate our entire cash balance. Let me be clear. Trying to time a debt limit increase to the last minute could be very dangerous. If Congress does not act and the United States suddenly cannot pay its bills, the repercussions would be serious. Raising the debt limit is Congress's responsibility because Congress and Congress alone is empowered to set the maximum amount the government can borrow to meet its financial obligations. Some in Congress have suggested that raising the debt limit should be paired with accompanying spending cuts and reforms. I have repeatedly noted that the debt limit has nothing to do with new spending. It has to do with spending that Congress has already approved and bills that have already been incurred. Failing to raise the debt limit would not make these bills disappear. The President remains willing to negotiate over the future direction of fiscal policy, but he will not negotiate over whether the United States should pay its bills. Certain members of the House and Senate also believe that it's possible to protect our economy by simply paying only the interest on our debts while stopping or delaying payments on a number of our other legal commitments. How can the United States choose whether to send Social Security checks to seniors or pay benefits to veterans? How can the United States choose whether to provide children with food assistance or meet our obligations to Medicare providers? The United States should not be put in a position of making such perilous choices for our economy and our citizens. There is no way of knowing the irrevocable damage such an approach would have on our economy and financial markets. Leaders have a responsibility to make our economy stronger, not to create manufactured crises that inflict damage. In 1987, President Reagan, addressing a debt limit impasse, delivered a message that is applicable to us today. This brinksmanship threatens the holders of government bonds and those who rely on Social Security and veterans benefits. Interest rates would skyrocket, instability would occur in financial markets, and the federal deficit would soar. The United States has a special responsibility to itself and the world to meet its obligations. The very last thing the U.S. economy needs now is a fight over whether we raise the debt ceiling. Not when we face serious challenges, both domestically and internationally, that require our full attention. And not when we know the kind of damage a financial and economic crisis can cause. Thank you, and I look forward to answering your questions.
Well, that was Treasury Secretary Jack Lew giving some very interesting information from his perspective, but in there, as we will see, there's some interesting messages also, keeping in mind, of course, that he was the White House Chief of Staff, and before that, he was the Director of the Office of Management and Budget, and so he has a particular closeness to the administration. Now we'll hear how the Republicans are seeing it. This is as of yesterday, how they sized up their position and presented their position before the people. And this is Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, Republican of Kentucky, and he is basically summarizing what the Republican position is and what has accounted for the lack of some kind of a negotiation.
Said back in 2007, back when Congress was weighing whether or not to raise the debt ceiling. Here's what the majority leader said back then. Until we change the policies that led down this path, we'll be back year and year digging the hole even deeper. And of course, that's essentially what so many Americans are saying today. If we're going to address the debt ceiling, then let's also address the root causes of the debt. It just makes good sense. You'd think our friend, the majority leader, would continue to agree with this logic as well. But that's not what he's been saying lately. He's basically saying it would be irresponsible for Congress to address the most pressing problem we face as a country, that it would be reckless to raise the debt ceiling if that also meant doing something about the debt. In other words, he now seems to think the debt ceiling, if that also meant doing something about the debt. In other words, he now seems to think the best thing to do about our crushing federal debt is to do nothing at all. That's why my friend, the majority leader, introduced legislation this week to now allow another $1 trillion to be added to the debt with no strings attached at all, none, just a $1 trillion debt ceiling increase. Just keep raising the credit card limit and let someone else deal with it later on. We've now got a debt close to $17 trillion, nearly double what it was in 2007. We're borrowing nearly $2 billion a day, $2 billion a day. And apparently, our friends on the other side are fine with that. They want us to give Washington a free pass to borrow and spend $1 trillion more. He's so comfortable with all this that my friend, the majority leader, rejected the president's own proposal this week to do a short-term increase followed by a negotiation on reforms. Well, in my view, we were sent here to solve problems, not defer them. We were sent here to confront the challenges of the moment, not ignore them. And that's why the majority leader's proposal just won't fly, because it's completely at odds with the wishes of most Americans. And that's something the president and a lot of other Senate Democrats agree with when a Republican president was asking for a debt limit increase. And of course, the problem's a lot more serious now than it was back then. Here's something else. Neither side wants to default on our debts. Neither side will allow it. That's certainly the case. And people should know that. It's irresponsible to do nothing about the debt, and it's irresponsible to be stirring up anxiety about default. But that doesn't mean the American people are wrong to ask that a debt limit increase include reforms aimed at actually tackling the problems that got us in this position in the first place, especially since what our country has routinely done in the past is just that. Going back to the Eisenhower administration, requests to raise the debt ceiling have often been tied to important fiscal reforms nearly 24 times, going back to the Eisenhower administration. That's how we got Graham Rudman Hollings in the 1980s. That's how we achieved balanced budgets in the 1990s. That's how we secured significant spending reductions in President Obama's first term, spending reductions he later campaigned on. Now, President Obama seems to think Congress should just increase the borrowing limit on his already maxed out credit card without a single negotiation. He seems to think the representatives of the American people should just do what he says, when he says it, because he says it, no questions asked. No questions asked. You know, that's just, it's not just irresponsible. It's not the way presidents of both parties have dealt with this problem in the past. Reagan negotiated, Clinton negotiated. And if President Obama wants America to increase the credit limit, he'll negotiate too. I'd also like to address one of the president's favorite talking points these days. He says he won't negotiate over and I'm quoting here, the bills Congress has already racked up. Look, if the president actually believed his own talking point, he wouldn't threaten to veto virtually every Republican attempt to get spending under control. We've tried endlessly. The only times we can even get him to discuss sensible budget reforms is when he's absolutely forced to, when Washington has to deal with things like the debt ceiling. So let's drop the tired talking point and just get about negotiating. I know the president doesn't like the facts that Americans elected divided government, but they did. We have divided government. No matter how much he tries to divide us, at the end of the day, he's going to have to deal with a Congress he doesn't entirely control. The American people can be persuaded to raise the debt ceiling, but they're not in any mood to simply hand over a blank check. They're looking for sensible reforms. So if the president wants to increase his credit limit, let's get to the table and negotiate. He's been inviting members of Congress to the White House this week. In fact, we were just told earlier today Senate Republicans have been invited to meet with the president tomorrow morning. That's a good start, but only if it means he's decided to drop his refusal to negotiate on solutions. Because if this is just a meeting where he simply reiterates that he won't negotiate, then it certainly won't be very productive. How are you?
Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky making his case. So now you've heard two. I didn't want to belabor the point by also adding that's more stuff that you've heard before from Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader. You've heard his speeches, I'm sure, many times, and you've heard the Democratic Party's position many times. Now, here's the interesting thing. In all of the hubbub, and this is why, you know, you always have to look at politics from a contextual point of view. What is the context of all of this in order to make sense of this? I want to see who will be the first person today to actually tell us the biggest irony of this whole hubbub about the negotiations and the debt ceiling and all these other matters that are now reaching a huge point of great stress and lots of, you know, lots of arguments and lots of very nasty things being said across the aisle. What is the appropriate context for all of this? What is the big thing that nobody's talking about that is so very necessary to understanding this particular predicament that we are in? What is the context for the predicament that we are in, which would make it so ironic that this now becomes a huge problem? We'll take a little break so that you can knit your brain cells together and call 888-874-4888. Let's see who gets the answer to this. Let's see if you can really put on your analyst hat and tell us what you're not being told by anybody else. What is the big irony, the largest irony of them all about this whole problem? Right after this message about PRN's programming. You're listening to Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and we're talking about something that has just not been raised, has just not been discussed, because suddenly it's irrelevant to the situation that we're in. It is grave. Everybody agrees with that. There's no doubting that Republicans and Democrats and the president and even the Supreme Court and everybody else in the country, we're all in agreement. It's a rough situation that we're in. But what is particularly interesting about this position that we're in? Do you have any ideas, any clues as to why it is, when it comes to politics, you really have to be on guard, because the messages you get have to do with things that are hidden. These are about hidden agendas. And so our minds are being co-opted. We are supposed to lend our minds and our convictions either to the Democrats or the Republicans. This is the setup that we have. But I want somebody to tell me, what is the biggest irony about the situation that we are in? Who is going to do that? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We have to be careful not to fall victim to these things, because we are being manipulated. We're being manipulated. And I have not heard it once mentioned in all of the media discussions so far that I have paid attention to, both in written form and in television. They're not talking about the particular irony here. But the fact is that we have been in a very serious situation for quite a long time. Who is going to get the prize? This is a special, you know, this should have been a pop quiz to see who would get the prize. What is the particular irony about all the fighting over what must be done now? Any ideas out there? I'm not going to say it until somebody gives a try. And then when you hear the answer, you go, my gosh, you're absolutely right. This is why sometimes, you know, people come across with their messages and, you know, they're forcing us. And only because the Democrats have what they consider to be the public relations upper hand right now, they're looked upon as being attacked by the Republicans, and they're taking full advantage of it. Harold from Queens.
Hello, Yatrice, how are you?
Thank you. What is the greatest irony?
But you know, Yatrice, the one word I have not heard was Obamacare. That was the word, that was the item that was all
Oh,
this,
Harold, this is Harold.
I was all about, wasn't it?
Oh, my gosh, I just remembered who. This is Harold.
Yes.
My very own Harold.
Your very own. All yours. Lock, stock, and barrel.
No, it's Obamacare. Yes, the fight is about Obamacare, and it's in the mix. We are very aware of that.
Yeah,
there's something that they're not even
heard.
Mentioning.
Who messes about it? And
something.
So I was listening to, you know, Jack Lew, and I listened to, from Kentucky, what's his name?
Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
And he was the one that's going to make the president a one-term president. And I think he led the charge, well, one of the leaders of the charge, to shut down the government, all of Obamacare.
Yeah, but we're looking for a really interesting answer, Harold.
Okay.
You're close.
That was just my observation. Okay.
Thanks for calling.
All right. So long.
Hello, Dina from Freeport.
Hi, you trees.
Hello.
Now, I was just listening to the other person, and I think he said what I was going to say first off about, didn't this all start with about Obamacare?
Yes, it did.
And
Obamacare was the nail that put the last nail in this coffin.
Right. So is that the irony of the pop quiz question?
No.
let me try again.
Please, go ahead.
Could the irony be that the problem was that the Republicans did not want to negotiate, and now they've turned it around and said Obama doesn't want to negotiate? Could that be it?
No.
No.
But I mean, you're right. Everybody's in the midst so far. You're right in the neighborhood. You're in the neighborhood, but that's not it.
Okay, well,
it's going to really, I mean, you're going to go, my gosh, how did I miss that?
Hmm.
but you gave it a good try.
Okay.
You gave it an excellent try.
Okay.
All right, so we had Harold and Dina so far. They're putting us, prodding us in the right direction, but we need the definitive irony here, which tells you how powerful the media can be in affecting the way we think and the way we behave, the choices we make, what we make of our reality. This situation has a specific context. Remember I said, no matter what it is you're considering, there's a context for it. There's a context for this. What is the context for this? What is the great irony of ironies? In all the talk about these trillions and trillions of dollars and the partial funding and whatever else they've got. Matengi from Maryland.
Hello?
Yes, you're on.
Yes, I'd like to make a go at it.
All right, good.
I think that the irony is that the reason why we are in the crisis is because we refuse to tax the rich. We refuse to really see what has put us in this predicament. It's not the entitlements. It's not cutting spending. It's not, you know, all the gains that have been made since this crisis, when the financial money that has been put into the system, 95% of that went to 1% of the of America's, well, the top 1% income. They're the ones who got the increase. So I think that it's not being put in its proper context.
Well, I agree with you, mm-hmm. but that's not the answer.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought I'd try.
You did very well. I mean, everybody's doing very well. But there is something very, very significant about this whole discussion.
Hmm.
Come on. Go, okay. Give it one more shot. Let's see if you get closer. I'm rooting for you. Go ahead.
Let's see. I'm not even close about the...
You're kind of far away.
Oh, well. Well, when we're talking about the government shutdown and everything, it's not,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't affect them at all. It's everyone else who has to feel the pain, not them. But yet they're the ones who determine, you know, they're the one making the rules that they don't have to play by.
Okay. That's also very valid, a very valid point. You're not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There's no right or wrong. It's just that we're looking for the context. But you made a very valiant try today.
Okay.
And so you should be proud. You did really well.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks so much
Bye-bye.
For contributing. Oh, we have someone here writing in on leadstories@gmail.com saying Social Security will be cut, and once they do it, all will be well. Excellent observation, but that's not the answer. Oh, compassion is, I am just getting rid of my compassion today. DX from LA, what have you to say, sir?
Hello, Utrecht. How are you?
Hello. Fine, thank you.
Good. Well, let's see if we're on the same page here. The biggest irony that I see here is that all of this mess is over funding a government that doesn't work anyway. That's the biggest irony I see.
You know
what? How
about
that?
You know what? In a very odd way, you're close, but even you don't know how you're close. Even you don't know it. You're very close. I don't want to give it away because it came out of your mouth, but you're very close. If anybody listened carefully to what you just said, there's a huge clue in there.
Right. Well, at least I'm pretty close. Would you say I'm the closest
yeah,
so
but
far?
But what we're looking for is we're looking for you to recognize.
Well,
that
let
you're
me
close.
Ponder it. Let me ponder it a little bit more. But Yatrice, I wanted to ask you something. You mentioned framing a few minutes ago. And I wonder if you've ever heard of George Lakoff, a professor he's a professor at UC Berkeley, and he's a cognitive linguist professor. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
No? I think you should try to get him on your show, because...
we'll be doing cognitive linking right here. You just
well,
did it.
I know, but he's... Well,
no, I understand.
I'm not going to go into it. I'll email you about it, and maybe you can...
I understand what you mean. But, you know, I want to thank you for indirectly supplying a piece of the answer, even though you don't know it.
No problem. But I'm going to ponder it more. And in that email, if nobody gets it before I do, I'm going to send it in.
Somebody's going to have to get it. We're getting closer, folks. We are getting closer. What is the irony, the greatest irony about the situation that we're in?
Yeah. That's the best that for right now, that's the best I can come up with, because...
But you did fine. You did fine.
Yeah,
the reason
why are we doing this?
This is really, we're having fun with it too, but there is a very important lesson that we will learn in another couple of minutes when we start to get into
right.
it.
But well, hopefully
it is
can.
About how... I mean, even people who are really wired into politics, everyday politics, we are so influenced by the other folks who don't know what the heck they're talking about most of the
right.
time. And
right.
so, we don't connect the dots for ourselves, because that in itself is inherent power. That is our leverage. So we will know whether we should pay attention to this or pay attention to that. But thank you so much. You,
right.
you get us going. Murad,
okay,
how are you?
Thank you
so much for calling.
How's it going, Utrecht?
Fine, thank you.
All right. I want to take a stab at the irony here.
The irony. Let's go.
All right. I believe the ironic thing about the whole situation is that it did start over Obamacare, and, they're trying to defund Obamacare by shutting down the government, essentially. The irony is that Obamacare came out anyway, and also, if anything, more people are aware of it than ever before. And another point on top of that is that through all the glitches and whatnot they've been having with Obamacare, I believe had they not shut down the government, the problems with Obamacare would be front and center. And everybody would be like, now we see what's going on. But instead of, attracting more attention to the issues that it is having, everybody's focused on the shutdown.
Very good point. A very nice point to consider. And you're absolutely correct about that. But as James Brown would say, howsoever, you're on the block. But we need
on the
you
block,
to find
but not,
out how, you're on the block. We
not quite at the
out.
House number yet.
You're not in the house. Thank you. Murad, where are you calling from?
New Jersey to North Carolina.
Okay, yep. Great. I'd just like to know where folks are from, because we're getting such a broad spread today. Very nice. Thank you, but you contributed nicely. Thank you so very much for that.
Thank you for taking the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Ray from Florida. Come on, Ray. You have got to have the answer.
Well, there are so many ironies. I mean, where do we start?
But pick one.
Based on the tape that you played,
yes.
could your irony be that Congress is presenting the notion that we have to spend more than we take in as normalcy, when there's no reason that that should be normal?
No, that's a very astute observation, but that wasn't it.
Hmm. Okay.
You said you have several. Give another one.
Well, this is not my idea, but I'm not a conservative, but I've heard it from some conservatives, and it kind of resonates. If 800,000 unessential employees have been furloughed, if they're unessential, then why do we need them? Kind of a minor point, but
That's
this
very,
country
very
is drowning in bureaucracy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So thank you. You did a great job.
All right.
And I agree with your observation. It
all right.
Just, again, we all in the neighborhood. And yeah. We must have bumped into these
it's
other guys on
block.
The way.
I guess there are a lot of houses on it.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks
Take
for
care.
Calling.
Bye.
Richard, where are you from?
Richmond, Virginia.
Richmond, Virginia. My goodness, what a spread today.
Yeah.
Richard, tell me, please, you have the answer.
Oh, I'm getting a very astute answer here. It's real simple. There's no way that they could ever default, because that would be the end of everything for the country.
Okay. That's good. That's very good. But that's not quite it.
Yeah. Hopefully it passed the Common Core curriculum, at least.
Yeah, you did. You're way ahead of the Common Core curriculum. That's elevated discussion from where I'm sitting. It takes it to the whole other level, but thank you.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, should I relent? Or let's take two more calls. I'm sure somebody out there has this answer. The clues are swimming all around you. They're right in your face. Neil, from the vitamin closet.
Hi.
Tell me.
Yes, I think what you're looking for is that the government doesn't have to borrow from the Federal Reserve. It can print its own money.
Yes, it can. But that's not the irony. You're not wrong. It's just I'm looking for a particular answer that is very simple, and we're all around it. We're kind of touching it, but we're not recognizing what it is. Thank you, Neil.
You're
Thanks
welcome.
For calling.
Thank you.
All right, we have one of the last two. Let's see if we can get another one. 888-874-4888. Now, this happens, I mean, everybody who's called today has had very strong insight, really good observations, and they're all pertinent and they're all correct. However, the context for this huge fight about all this money and the crisis that we're in, there is a very simple one. There's a very simple thing. That we are ignoring. We have from leadstories@gmail.com, we have Nakengi saying, I'll take another stab. The Republicans, Romney, supported the Obama plan originally. Well, it's kind of like the other way around. It's the Obama plan that looked very similar to Romney's plan. But yes, thank you for that. Livia, what have you to say? I noticed how often Ronald Reagan was brought up to prove their point. I'm sure that's not correct, but that's what I noticed. Fantastic. And you are absolutely correct. But that's not it. And we have the president said he will not negotiate, but now they are negotiating. Yeah, well, all right, but that's not it. All right. Should I? The next person who calls should say, all right, what's the answer? And I'll give you the answer. Whoever is next, say, what is the answer? And I'll start the answer. All right, I'll be compassionate. I'll be compassionate. This is a form of media literacy, and it has to do with how easy it is for us to be separated from our reality. It is a very, very easy thing. What I'm looking for is this. We have a crisis. It's been building and building and building and building. And it's the Republicans against the Democrats, and those bums over there don't want to do this, and these jerkers over here don't want to do that, and they're taking the country down, and it's the president in the middle of all of this. What, ladies and gentlemen, we have not had a federal budget since 2009. That's the obvious context. The country has been operating without a federal budget. We don't have a budget. But this becomes an issue now, and not since 2009. All they have been able to do, and that was just this past April, was pass resolutions. There is no federal budget. There hasn't been one. So it does come across as a bit disingenuous, to say the least, that the fiscal order, putting the house in order and all the stuff, is now becoming a major issue. It was a major issue in 2009. We have had a full term of this very president. This is what he should have been complaining about all along. Give me a budget. Where is the budget? Articulate a budget. Demand from the Democrats a budget. The Republicans and Democrats agreed. There is no rush. There's no need for a federal budget. And we have gone, as this nation, as the great superpower, we have gone without a federal budget for 5 years. And there still isn't one. That's the irony. Now, how are you going to convince people all of a sudden that it is now important? We have to articulate a budget. But they still are not talking about a budget. They talk about this covering our debts. What is the budget? The Republicans didn't seem to be too upset about it for all these years. The Democrats haven't been too upset about it for all these years. Barack Obama hasn't made an issue of it for all these years. Now, how in the world could you run a country without a federal budget for 5 years? And we're now going into Barack Obama's second term as president, and as president of the United States, the very first thing he should be demanding is that the country articulate a budget and pass a budget. But there is no need to have a budget if you could spend what you want and give who you want how much ever they want. And nobody's keeping track of what's going on, where the dollars are coming from, where the dollars are going to. So the irresponsibility that is being raised now is convenient for political reasons. If the country could have survived for 5 years without a budget, why make a big fuss about it now? What's the reason we haven't had a budget? Why wasn't that a top priority? Why wasn't the Jack Lew, who was then head of the Office of the Budget Committee, not Budget Committee, the Office of Management and Budget, why wasn't he in the forefront of getting this thing done? He could sit now before the Senate Finance Committee and talk about the dire consequences of not having an agreement between Republicans and Democrats over how to cover a $17 trillion debt. But where did it come from? That was his job. And even as he sat there before the Finance Committee, he's still sticking up for his old boss. He's still sticking up for Obama to cover him, saying, you know, we have manufactured crises. Well, you were part of it. You were part of the manufacturing of the crisis. And this is what we need to understand. This is the context for this entire conversation. This national crisis, which is now an international crisis, which speaks to the incompetence or the malevolence of these people who are in office, playing, you know, however they want to for the resources and the assets of this country, and bringing it on the backs of citizens. This is why this must happen now. Obamacare must go through, because it's a numbers game. The more people they can get in there, the faster that they can collect the money. They know there's a huge hole. This is the context. So when these people show up and they sit down in front of microphones and they have their committee hearings and they're talking this and talking that, the one question nobody is asking is, where the heck is the federal budget? Why has it been missing for 5 years? How could we possibly have run a country without a budget? How could that possibly have happened? And we're serious about government and bipartisanship. And Jack Lew talks about transparency in his speech. We don't know a thing about the budget. It apparently was not important. So the attitude should be, this is not important. We should not worry. Now they're going to, you know, do a stick up. They're pointing the gun at ordinary people just trying to make it from Monday to Tuesday. You guys are going to pay for the fact that we don't have something now. Well, geez. Do you see all the reasons why this government, this whole thing should be dissolved? Just sweep them all out, get a whole new crew in. A whole different system in, because these folks are not performing. Certainly not in the interests of regular people. Now think about that. We are intelligent people, politically conscious people, politically astute people. And yet they did such a great job of lifting the really important issue here, which is directly related to the situation we're in. The United States has been functioning for 5 years without a federal budget. And there, if this didn't happen, if somebody didn't draw the line and say, well, folks, we have until October the 17th to figure out what we're going to do, we wouldn't have this crisis either. They would just continue. And that tells us something about Barack Obama. No president really wants, unless, I mean, he has other than obvious reasons, I mean, he has hidden agendas, no president would want to run anything. You don't run a business without knowing what your assets are and what your liabilities are. You don't run your checkbook that way. But this man has run a nation for 5 years without a budget and without insisting that his party produce one and without insisting that the Republicans also produce one. So the concession that Barack Obama has been making all along to the Republicans is, we're doing what we want over here, you guys do what you want over there. And we'll talk about the political differences, because of ideological differences and political differences, we can't come to the table. No, you're busy taking care of your own little fiefdom, divvying up the country's money, forking it over to this entity in that one. And they're both playing the same game. Now there is no wiggle room left. They've got to say something. And the vitriol, they have to come up with something. But they still are not articulating and putting together a national budget. And that's the stinking story right here. That is the context for it. Well, so, you feel okay? My thing is, don't let these folks rattle your brain. Have a great weekend. We'll talk with each other again on Monday. You did really well. Really, really well. But put on your thinking cap. Don't let them get into your brain. It's your most valuable piece of real estate.